Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's been a big year for Iowans on the NBC reality singing competition, The Voice. There were four contestants from Iowa this season, all of them incredibly talented, and my next guest is one of them. Chris Weaver has an unusual background, performing both as a worship leader at his church, recently Lutheran Church of Hope in Des Moines. He's now a worship leader in New York City, or as Nedra Bell, his drag character. He performed solo as himself on The Voice. And here's a moment from his blind audition on the show.
Oh, she may be weary. Young girls, they do get weary.
Congratulations.
Oh, but when she's weary, try a little tenderness. Oh.
Just a little bit from Chris Weaver's blind audition on The Voice. He was eliminated in early November, but still an incredible performer and an incredible experience. And he is on the line with me now. Hello, Chris.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you so much for being here. And I'd love to talk to you. I know that you really started singing in church as a kid. Tell me about that.
I actually grew up in Long Island, New York. A lot of people think I grew up in Iowa, but I'm from New York.
All right, and tell me about singing in church. How did you get started?
Well, my godmother started taking me to church when I was about 3 years old. And I used to come home and put on my pastor's shirt and preach the message that he preached. Somewhere in there, I got involved in choirs and singing in church. And oftentimes, I like watch videos of me singing when I was very young. And at the time, I wish somebody would have said, you know, maybe we should, you know, invest in something else. Maybe you have a different calling. But I'm very grateful that they didn't, because I am where I am today. And so that's really how I got my start.
I was reading an article in the Des Moines Register about you and two of the other Iowan contestants on The Voice, and all of you had a background of singing in church. Do you feel like there's safety in numbers when people start singing in church, that maybe it's a not very daunting environment because you are singing among so many other people? You're not standing out and singing on your own.
For some people it is. You know, I've worked at a number of churches, and some churches you do interviews for your worship team. And if people didn't make it to the worship team, or, you know, you just didn't feel like they had what it takes to carry their own, we often try to recommend them to the choir. I realize the power of music. And so you never want to discourage anybody from ever singing.
When did you start performing outside of church?
Oh, school. Oh, no. My mother's a Pentecostal preacher. So it wasn't until I was much, much, much older. I used to get calls at school saying, why was the radio on the secular station? Which I had to explain to her that they played gospel music in the morning. So it wasn't until I was much older, because my mother was like, you know, we listen to gospel music in this house. We sing gospel music. So I think it was when I got to college, right?
And you went to college in Pella, Iowa, Central College, right?
You know, the secular music capital of the world. No. Pella, Iowa. I did. I went to Central College.
So I'm curious. I mentioned before that you perform as Nedra Bell, your drag character. When did you start getting involved with drag?
So I remember I moved to West Des Moines, and I remember going out in West Glen in that area, and I ran into this gay couple, and I said, "Hey," I said, you know, I love coming out here, but I've never been to a gay bar, you know, here in Des Moines. And they took me. Immediately, I started meeting people and making friends. And it was that Halloween that they said, you know, come on. And, again, I grew up in a Christian household. We didn't celebrate Halloween. So they said, come to the Halloween party, you know, make sure you wear your costume. So I thought the only thing I thought of was, you know, Tyler Perry's Madea was very big at that time. I said, I'm going to be that. So I ended up being the first runner-up in the costume contest. At the bar, and somebody said to me, they said, have you ever thought about doing this, like doing drag? And of course I answered no, but that was a lie. Of course I already had a name in mind and everything.
Oh, really? You already had a name? Already a character was starting to form in your brain?
I did, because a friend of mine said, what if you ever do it? You need to have a name. And so, you know, but I wasn't going to tell them. So it was, I'll never forget, actually this year will be 6 years. Of me doing drag. And I did the Toys for Tots show, the benefit show. They said, why don't you do that? And I remember nobody had time to paint me. So I just had a little, this hideous lipstick on and this eyeshadow. No more makeup than that. And I went on stage, and I remember the first two songs I ever did was And I Am Telling You by Jennifer Hudson, funny, and I'm Every Woman by Whitney Houston. And somebody said, your lip sync is so accurate. And so they said, you know, you should do another show here. And so literally after that moment, 6 years later, here I am.
So tell me about Nedra. What's she like?
Nedra loves the Lord, but she always seems to find a little trouble. No, she's just a good time. She loves to interact with the audience, you know, especially gay or straight. If you notice somebody's first time in the gay bar at a drag show, you know, it's always a good, it's always Nedra's pleasure to invite them to the stage and have a little fun with them. I firmly believe, and you know, because most drag shows you have like about an hour and a half, especially with Nedra, that I believe it's my job in that hour and a half time with so much going on in the world, it's my job to make sure that you leave here with a smile on your face, that you leave here laughing, that you leave here, you know, thinking, man, that was amazing. That whatever she sang or whatever she left saying really just helped me forget about whatever was going on in my world for just that short amount of time.
How do you think she's different from you, besides the obvious?
You know, she was very different in the fact of confidence. You know, there was a lot of things that Nedra would, you know, Nedra could just walk up to people in the bar who she didn't know and make conversation. You know, Chris could never do that. Well, it would take some prompting or take some time. But I honestly believe because of Nedra, that I've become more confident as Chris. And not that we're, I wouldn't say we're two of the same. And you know, it's for me right now, it's about figuring out branding, especially now that I have two platforms. You know, I want to keep Chris very distinctly different from Nedra. But they do share a lot of the same qualities in caring for people and you know, wanting, again, to see people laugh and to see people enjoy themselves. But Nedra, you know, Nedra's a little more slick with the tongue. she'll say something, you know, she'll throw a little shade more often than Chris will.
Do you feel like being Nedra gave you the confidence to perform as Chris, because this isn't something you had been doing as much, this solo performance as yourself before The Voice, right?
I mean, yeah, but not as often, correct. Just in church and you know.
So what do you think helped you take that step to be Chris Weaver on stage?
I think it was twofold. When I got the call, I was like, this will be great. Because I've been dying to be able to just go to a gig. Not have to put on hip pads, not to have to put on makeup, and just get there and just sing. But I also realized what Nedra had done for me. So I said, I'm grateful to do both, but I would just love the opportunity to have, you know, Chris more involved in my everyday life of performing. And for me, I think knees are definitely getting that confidence because when it comes to competitions, I'm normally a nervous wreck. But I remember going on stage for the blind auditions, and I remember saying to myself, you have one chance to do this. There's no redos. There's no, oh, can I start over? So I said, get on stage and do this as if this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And I honestly think because of drag that I don't think that, you know, that would have crossed my mind. Because, you know, especially when I get in drag, there's no, really not ever nervous or you know, hesitant. I just go for it. So I said, you know, I just need to be that way in my everyday life as a performer. Because when people see that, you know, they're drawn to you in that sense.
You mentioned earlier that your mother would call you out on listening to secular radio stations. I'm curious, as a gay man and as a drag performer, which are not always the same thing, not always related, but how has your family and how has your church family reacted to this side of Chris?
It's been great. It's been absolutely amazing. I was just back in Iowa last weekend, and I sang at Lutheran Church of Hope. And so that was amazing to have the support system behind me there. In my church in New York, they absolutely love it. It's been something that I never imagined could have happened. And their support has been amazing. And my parents, you know, we were recording for the show. And I remember they brought up the question about being a drag queen to my mother. And in my head, I'm like, oh, crap. Oh, gosh, this is not going to go well. So they said, well, what are your thoughts on this? And I think one of the most powerful moments for me was my mother saying, I don't understand it. She said, but Chris has always been one to learn people and to get to know people. And she said, I'm going to decide to take a chapter from that book. And, I'm getting kind of like, well, thanks. So it was just a lot. It was a very emotional moment for me to see my mother. I mean, you know, it's been amazing. My family's been great. My dad, you know, just everybody in my inner circle has been so supportive.
Did you hear from a lot of viewers who relate to your experience as a gay man growing up in the church, in a church that may not have always been welcoming of that?
I'll tell you what the funny thing is. You know you're going to be on TV. You know you're going to get fan mail. And in your head, you know, what was that is the first couple of emails you get, like, oh, my God, we love you. We're such a fan. You know, we can't get enough of your singing. We support you. When you get to live, we're going to vote for you. But what you don't realize that you'll get is messages saying, hey, I've struggled with suicide, but your music has really helped me with that. I tell people the message that I got from multiple parents that really hit close to home, really let me understand the reality of what's really happening. And this is not just a joyride, but you are now in a arena of being a influence for people and an example for people. So I got a couple of emails saying, hey, Chris, you know, my son or my daughter came out when they were about 16, and they're a couple of years older now, and they have such a passion for ministry and for God. But I am trying to steer them in a different direction from wanting to work in the church because I'm afraid of, church hurt, or that the church will, you know, kill their dream. And in that moment, that was really I literally had to stop and say, what did I just hear? Like, for a parent to say, I'm trying to discourage my child from working in the church because I'm afraid that the church will hurt them. I had never heard a statement like that And to hear it said or typed was literally mind-blowing for me. So I think that was the biggest shock and the message that you received.
So how do you respond to that?
So I actually, it really just got my wheels turning to say, you know, there needs to be a resource. There needs to be an outlet for young people. There are so many young people who, you know, first of all, there's so many young people who hide it, and then in the long run end up having mental breakdowns or committing suicide. But there's so many who, you know, I mean, it's 2017, so things have changed a bit, but not enough, if I'm still getting these messages. So for me, I said, you know, we're trying to figure out how to be a resource, how to be a for these young people. Because if it's not, you know, some of them have no one standing behind them. Some of them have great support systems. Some of them have, you know, just a few. But if I can be a voice and I can be a system of support for these young people, and so now, you know, we're just figuring out the best capacity to do that. So you'll hear more about that soon, but it's definitely something that is really on my heart right now to figure that out.
Chris Weaver, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's been a pleasure. I think you almost got me to cry like two times. That never happened.
Chris Weaver, he now lives in New York City. He's a worship leader at a church there and, of course, still performing. We'll go out with another performance from NBC's The Voice. This is I Put a Spell on You.
I put a spell on you. Cause you're mine. You better watch the things you do. And I ain't lying. Oh, I ain't lying.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Well, I put a spell on you.